Today on Seculo, Democrats in the Senate plotting a new shutdown over the conflict in Iran.
Keeping you informed and engaged, now more than ever. This is Seculo. We want to hear from you. Share and post your comments or call 1-800-684-3110. And now your host.
Welcome to Seculo. Will Haynes here with you today, and we've got a jam-packed show, and you're going to want to get in this conversation early. Call me at 1-800-684-3110. We have CeCe Heil of the ACLJ joining us in a few segments to talk about a major victory in Pakistan from the ACLJ, as well as Rick Grinnell joining us later on some of this news regarding the conflict in Iran. And here's what is fascinating to me today. The Democrats are showing their hands that they have really only one thing in their toolbox that they feel like they can use to get their way, and that is threaten a shutdown or create a shutdown. We know that the Department of Homeland Security is currently shut down because of the inability for Democrats to negotiate and come together for the betterment of the country. But now we have Senator Cory Booker, as well as a handful of other Senate Democrats, that are going to shut down the United States Senate over the Iran conflict. They are going to use procedural measures and other things at the disposal of individual senators to stop all the business of the United States Senate until their demands are met. And what are these demands? They want testimony from Secretary of State Marco Rubio, Secretary of War Pete Hegseth, as well as other senior officials to testify before key committees over this military conflict with Iran. Now, I'm actually certain that will happen at some point. I'm certain that these members of the administration will testify before the Senate, before the Armed Services Committee or the Homeland Security Committees, probably in both the Senate and the House, because that's how this works. That's how the oversight of Congress works. But at this point, with their War Powers Resolution vote failing, they feel like they have to turn to other things to make a name for themselves while U.S. men and women in uniform are conducting this operation in Iran. They want to shut down their branch of government over this. And this is what we're hearing from Senator Booker. Says, each individual senator has a tremendous amount of power to disrupt the normal functioning of the Senate, as well as certain privileges that we can exercise. And what we have agreed to now is that we are not going to let the Senate continue business as usual. Now, the Senate already has not been a very speedy process, and to some degree, that's by design. It is the deliberative body. Some call it, at least formally, the world's greatest deliberative body. In recent years, we have seen it not necessarily live up to some of those standards. But what we see now is that the opposition within the U.S. Senate, the Democrat minority, is going to hijack the Senate and make it go at a standstill until they get their way. What do you think about this? Call me at 1-800-684-3110. This group of senators, which includes Senator Booker, Senator Chris Murphy of Connecticut, Senator Tim Kaine, a failed vice presidential candidate from Virginia, Senator Tammy Duckworth of Illinois, and you guessed it, Senator Adam Schiff is on this as well. Let me know how you feel about these senators deciding to shut down their branch of government because they're not getting what they want right away. Call me at 1-800-684-3110. As I mentioned earlier, in a few segments, we'll be joined by CeCe Heil to tell you about a major victory in Pakistan that happened just yesterday. And this as we are in our 7 days of global impact. It's a perfect time to tell you about this victory. And you can have your global impact doubled right now if you support us at aclj.org/global. That's aclj.org/global, and have your impact doubled. We'll be right back.
Right now, your most sacred rights are under attack. Your right to free speech, your right to worship, your right to educate your children the way you choose. If successful, these attacks will have a destructive impact on the future of our republic. We're fighting in courtrooms across the country to have a lasting impact, defending and upholding our values that this nation was founded on. From protecting the rights of kids to pray and share their faith.
The best thing you can do is take a stand. There's nothing too small. A kid who wants to start a Bible club is how the ACLJ got its first case to the U.S. Supreme Court. And today, we would take that case as long as we needed to.
Every victory makes a major impact. And it's only possible because of the support of ACLJ members and champions. This is your opportunity to double your impact to defend freedom. For you, your children, and generations to come. Go to aclj.org/impact and have your tax-deductible donation doubled today.
We've witnessed monumental legal victories from defending the 14th Amendment and protecting our sacred American right to vote, the overturning of Roe v. Wade, and standing up for the religious liberty of our kids and seniors. But even with the many historic wins we've achieved, the battle is far from over. The attacks on our constitutionally protected rights persist. Countless unborn babies remain in jeopardy, and across the globe, innocent Christians are being targeted and killed across this country and around the world. This fight isn't just the ACLJ's, it's all of ours. It belongs to every American who wants to preserve the values and beliefs on which this nation was founded. None of the victories we've won would have been possible without the unwavering support of ACLJ members and ACLJ champions. It's been an honor to fight for you all these years. Join us in fighting for freedom. Have your donation doubled at aclj.org/freedom.
Welcome back to Seculo. I'm Will Haynes, and we are talking about this move by U.S. senators that happen to be Democrats that are vowing to shut down, yet again, their favorite thing to do, this time the U.S. Senate over the Iran conflict. We are hearing from Senator Booker, who is kind of leading this charge. They're going to use procedural motions and privileges that individual senators do have that are in the rules of the Senate to try and stall all business of the Senate until they get what they want. And what do they want? They want hearings in both the Armed Services Committee as well as the Senate Foreign Affairs Committee to be able to bring forward Secretary of State Marco Rubio, Secretary of War Pete Hegseth, other senior officials to testify on this conflict in Iran. Now, also, I feel like many of these members, if they wanted to have these conversations with Secretary of War, with Secretary Rubio, they could do that. They're very powerful senators, many of them. They could have these conversations and even probably get them to agree to hearings, set this up. But instead, they're choosing publicity stunt route, threatening a shutdown. And then I assume they'll say this is the Republican shutdown of the Senate because we're not getting our way. That's how they play these out with their PR teams and their spin on it. But this is what Senator Booker also said. He said, it is unacceptable. We have not had hearings and we have not had sufficient debate on the issues in public. In hearings, witnesses under oath, this is what we are demanding. You also hear from Senator Chris Murphy, where he said, what we're saying is that we're not going to let the Senate be silent. We want there to be a hearing so that the American public can hear from their leaders why they think this war is in the national interest. I think they'll fail in that exercise. One, there has been no lack of communication from the executive branch. The president is giving press conferences directly to and taking questions, talking directly to the American people. The Secretary of War is giving multiple updates almost daily, giving updates on what is going on and taking questions from the press. The difference is that when it happens to be a committee, typically what you see is the circus. You see the senators try to hammer down a talking point, many times not even allowing the member or to explain, the person that's testifying, the witness. In this case, it would be cabinet members. We know how this plays out. They will be trying to get their talking point across. They will let them start to answer, but cut them off and not allow them to fully testify. So I don't think that they can say that this administration isn't talking to the American people. We have seen them talking nonstop to the American people. Yes, I know that this is an important part of their role of oversight, and I do believe it will and should happen. But the way that they're doing this, of saying we're going to shut down the Senate, they already have one shutdown. The Department of Homeland Security is not funded as we speak. At a time where, and we're going to talk about this more, the U.S. is saying that they're receiving encrypted communication out of Iran that they believe could be activating terrorist cells, sleeper assets around the world. And what have we seen? We have seen panic at airports where the TSA is short-staffed because of the Department of Homeland Security shutdown. We are seeing there be flights diverted. There is already a level of high alert and panic that is taking place. Instead of maybe debating whether or not they should refund Department of Homeland Security, they are more concerned about their 15 minutes of fame during these hearings to be able and do the serious job of questioning cabinet members, of which is a part of their job. I will give that to them. But there's a lot of other business that should be going on at the same time. Maybe if you want people to take you seriously, you should say, we think it's of utmost importance to refund the Department of Homeland Security. But we also want guarantees that we are going to get hearings from these cabinet members. Maybe people would take you more seriously. But I feel like this is going to backfire on these senators. And I'll read you their names again. This is Senator Cory Booker from New Jersey, Senator Chris Murphy from Connecticut, Senator Tim Kaine of Virginia. He is the one who introduced that War Powers resolution that failed last week. Senator Tammy Duckworth of Illinois, Senator Tammy Baldwin of Wisconsin, and of course, Senator Adam Schiff of California. But once again, even the language from Cory Booker saying that we are demanding these hearings, be hearings, debates, and questions answered. It is unacceptable we have not had hearings. We're 10 days into this. Have you tried to actually work with the committee chairs and work out a path to have these hearings? I understand you can call a hearing pretty quickly, but also understanding that the Secretary of War and the Secretary of State are both in the thick of this right now. You can probably figure this out if you don't want the sound bites on TV and elevate your name status for, I don't know, maybe a potential attempt at being president again, Senator Booker. Is that the plan here? Because all of this just seems so disingenuous to me that they are going to shut down the business of the Senate for hearings at the same time that they currently are holding the Department of Homeland Security in a shutdown perpetually. Now they've even seen that the Secretary of Homeland Security has been reassigned and there will be another one. Are they going to wait and hold up a nomination to lead that very important part of the executive branch while we are in a heightened security risk scenario? These are the questions I want to know from the senators. I know they have their questions they want answered from the members of the executive branch, but the people who elect these senators that are supposed to be representatives of their states, of the people that elect them and send them to Congress, where are those questions? Why aren't you working on refunding Homeland Security? Even if you want reforms, why are you not working towards that? Instead, you're just keeping it shut down. Your War Powers resolution already failed. You weren't able to stop this conflict. So during that, maybe work for the betterment of the country instead of what you're doing right now. And that is trying to do another political stunt of shutting down now the Senate. People already complain that Congress isn't effective enough. Do you think this is adding to your credibility, senators? When you are saying, you know what? We're going to exercise our authority and our privileges, and we are going to shut this down. What do you think? Give me a call, 1-800-684-3110. But I also think it's so rich when someone like Adam Schiff is a part of this group, obviously trying to make a name for himself. He was on Real Time with Bill Maher, and this was just a couple days ago. And I want you to hear this bite because of how unserious many of these Democrat senators are. This is Bill Maher asking him a question about conflict from the executive branch. This is Bite 20. Just listen to the response from Adam Schiff. Let's roll it.
This statement from the administration, the president had the constitutional authority to direct the use of military force because he could reasonably determine that such use of force was in the national interest. That's too vague for you?
Totally vague.
Okay, because that's from Obama about Libya.
The gotcha question there from Bill Maher is not lost on anyone because it is so partisan. It's because it's President Trump. It's because it's Secretary Rubio and Secretary Hegseth that are conducting this. When it was Libya, no one had a problem in their party with the operation that was taking place under the War Powers Act. And it was sold to the Congress at the time, the American people, that he had constitutional authority to use the military force because he could reasonably determine that such use of force was in the national interest. That is the prerogative of the president. And now that it's not a president that they voted for or that they support, they're going to shut down branches of government. They're going to shut down their own job because they don't like who it is. This is why they don't get the conversations that they're looking for, because they are presenting themselves in such an unserious way. But they may be unserious in their methods, but it is gravely serious to the United States. And so I think they should be called out for these tactics, these antics. Folks, when we get back, we are going to be joined by CeCe Hyle to talk about a big victory out of Pakistan, because the work of the ACLJ doesn't stop. In places you may not even think that we operate in, we have a global impact. And that is why we are showcasing that during this 7 days of global impact. And you can double your impact by going to aclj.org/global. You are in this fight with us. We cannot do it without you. Go to aclj.org/global today and double your global impact.
We've witnessed monumental legal victories from defending the 14th Amendment and protecting our sacred American right to vote, the overturning of Roe versus Wade, and standing up for the religious liberty of our kids and seniors. But even with the many historic wins we've achieved, the battle is far from over. The attacks on our constitutionally protected rights persist. Countless unborn babies remain in jeopardy. And across the globe, innocent Christians are being targeted and killed across this country and around the world. This fight isn't just the ACLJ's. It's all of ours. It belongs to every American who wants to preserve the values and beliefs on which this nation was founded. None of the victories we've won would have been possible without the unwavering support of ACLJ members and ACLJ champions. It's been an honor to fight for you all these years. Join us in fighting for freedom. Have your donation doubled at aclj.org/freedom.
Right now, your most sacred rights are under attack. Your right to free speech, your right to worship, your right to educate your children the way you choose. If successful, these attacks will have a destructive impact on the future of our republic. We're fighting in courtrooms across the country to have a lasting impact, defending and upholding our values that this nation was founded on. From protecting the rights of kids to pray and share their faith,
the best thing you can do is take a stand. There's nothing too small. A kid who wants to start a Bible club is how the ACLJ got its first case to the U.S. Supreme Court. And today, we would take that case as long as we needed to.
Every victory makes a major impact, and it's only possible because of the support of ACLJ members and champions. This is your opportunity to double your impact to defend freedom for you, your children, and generations to come. Go to aclj.org/impact and have your tax-deductible donation doubled today.
Welcome back to Seculo. We are talking today about the Democrats that are vowing to shut down the Senate until they get their hearings on this Iran conflict. If you want to join that conversation, call me at 1-800-684-3110. I'll be taking calls very soon. But I have Cece Heil joining me, senior counsel here at the ACLJ, to talk about some of the other work as we go through this 7 days of global impact of the work of the ACLJ. And Cece, we had a victory in Pakistan yesterday, and these are hard-fought victories. This is a place where, especially at the lower court levels, are very difficult to get good victories, and then we see how long it takes the appeals process, but we don't stop fighting. But tell us about this victory that we were able to get for a client in Pakistan yesterday.
Yeah, this is a really great victory. Mr. Javed is an elderly Christian homeless man who lives in a small town in Pakistan. And basically, he took refuge in a dilapidated building in a Christian cemetery. And so living his life quietly, literally, he's a elderly homeless man. And his neighbors, who are Muslim, people that lived next to the cemetery, decided in May of 2024 that they were going to go to the police and file a complaint with the police that they had heard Mr. Javed insulting the Prophet Muhammad's family members. So in May, they filed the report with the police, and Mr. Javed was arrested and charged with insulting words spoken against the Prophet Muhammad's family members, which carries a 3-year sentence. So Mr. Javed was, of course, put in jail. And I'm going to just brag on our law office there in Pakistan because of their stellar reputation. This small community was about 8 hours from our offices. But the Christian community, of course, it's small, and the Christian community in the small community is even smaller. They hear about this case, and they immediately then contact our offices. Again, 8 hours away. And so as soon as we got involved in the case, Mr. Javed had spent, I think, about a month and a half in jail before we got notice of the case. We went there immediately. We filed for bail, and we got him out. And this is, again, in, I think that was July of 2024. So we start fighting this case. And as what usually happens in Pakistan, we literally had 13 postponements. So every time Mr. Javed's case came up for a hearing, it was postponed. And it was postponed because these people that tried to file a report did not show up. So the witnesses never showed up to court. They never provided any evidence that Mr. Javed had said anything against the Prophet Muhammad's family members. So after 13 times, our office is going to court last week, and they're prepared to file a petition for acquittal, which is basically a motion to dismiss. Amazingly, the judge said, you don't even have to file that petition. I am going to dismiss this case. So last week, after we've been fighting this since July of 2024, on March 6th of 2026, we obtained a victory for Mr. Javed. Again, a homeless, elderly Christian man who did not do anything wrong and ended up spending a month and a half in jail because of false allegations. But our office was able to jump in, get him bail, and now we've actually got him acquitted. So that is a huge victory in Pakistan.
And once again, when we talk about the global impact of the ACLJ, this is not a case you're going to hear anywhere else. This is going to get picked up by the media here in the United States, and everyone's going to hear about it. But it is vitally important work. We have four other clients in Pakistan that are on death row for doing similar allegations. The problem in Pakistan is that, one, the Christian community is already seen as a lower class. They are already looked down upon by the other members of their community. And then on top of that, you have laws like these blasphemy laws, which are a violation of Pakistan's membership at the UN, even still having these on the book. but they do. And it is used as a tool by people in the Muslim community to harass, attack people they don't like in the Christian community.
Absolutely.
And that's what we see time and time again. If someone's a nuisance to them, they go for a blasphemy law, they make an allegation, and those people end up many times on death row. If they don't like them for other reasons, straight to the blasphemy laws. And at the higher courts, many times we do have victories. It's long and hard fought. But when we talk about the mission of the ACLJ and even the commandments of Christ to what you do to the least of these, we are going and fighting in places where the Christian community are seen as outcast, cast aside. They have no legal representation. They have no means to get that. But just like here in America, where people don't have to hire an attorney and put their entire life savings on the line for us to stand up for their human rights and their constitutional rights, we do the same in Pakistan. So while it may not be a flashy headline story that you're going to see here in the United States, it's vitally important. And many times these individuals' lives are on the line, and we're still fighting those cases today.
Absolutely. And when you talk about the least of these, I mean, Mr. Javed is an elderly homeless man, and obviously he would never have the means to be able to hire an attorney to fight this case. And really, again, I'm going to brag on our offices in Pakistan, because even the attorneys going and fighting for these Christians who have been falsely charged, you know, that's not a good position for them to be in. That's not a popular position. So they put, you know, their lives at risk too. And I will say also another thing with our office in Pakistan, when we do have success in these blasphemy cases, because it's usually mobs that have targeted Christians, and like you said, they're going after them to destroy them, we literally have to help these people a lot of times move away and start their lives all over again somewhere else, because we need to protect them. And that's what our offices do there in Pakistan. I mean, they're just, it's very successful. Unfortunately, we do have a lot of these postponements, like we saw in this case, 13, on our cases that are at the Supreme Court for blasphemy and people are on death row. We see that same thing. Time and time we get to the hearing where we're hopeful that the Supreme Court will actually acquit our clients. We have postponement after postponement, but we hang in there to the very end. And as we see, we achieved victory for Mr. Javed.
That's right. And I want to encourage people also stick around. In the final segment of the broadcast, I'm going to play a video of another one of our clients' parents, and that's Shahzad.
Yes.
It's a case we've talked about many times on this broadcast. An individual, a young man, was 16 when he was arrested and put on death row for another blasphemy case. And when you hear the parents in Pakistan tell this story, I feel like it's important for you to see it, because we can talk about this and it sounds almost theoretical, these cases. But we had our team able to film the parents, which is takes courage to do, because being under a spotlight when they've already put your son on death row for allegations, but telling his story, I'm going to play that for you later, because it's important for you to see this is real. This is tangible. These are real people whose lives are at stake only because they are Christians. But the ACLJ, not just here, but all around the world, is fighting for them. And you can make an impact as well. As we're in this 7 days of global impact, double your impact. Go to aclj.org/global and stand with us as we continue these long fights for people's freedom and lives. aclj.org/global.
Right now, your most sacred rights are under attack. Your right to free speech, your right to worship, your right to educate your children the way you choose. We're fighting in courtrooms across the country to have a lasting impact.
And it's only possible because of the support of ACLJ members and champions. This is your opportunity to double your impact to defend freedom. Go to aclj.org/impact and have your tax-deductible donation doubled today.
keeping you informed and engaged. Now more than ever. This is Seculo.
Welcome to Seculo, second half hour of the broadcast. If you want to talk with me, go to 1-800-684-3110 to be heard on air. We're going to pivot back now. If you missed the previous segment, go back and listen. It was with CeCe Hyle talking about a major victory in Pakistan for a client who had no means to hire attorneys, but was facing harsh punishments under the nation's blasphemy laws. But we were able to get that individual set free, charges dropped, and not having to face a long prison sentence for an allegation of blasphemy in Pakistan. It's very powerful to hear the work of our international affiliates and being able to tell you that, mainly because we are not beholden to corporate overlords or the mainstream media. We can bring you stories like that that would never make the news. There's not enough salaciousness there to it. It's not great for a headline, but it's vitally important work that you contribute to when you give to the ACLJ. So I encourage you to go back and listen to that. But we are talking about the Democrats in the Senate that are vowing to shut down the Senate because they're not getting their way. They're not getting hearings thus far from Secretary Rubio, Secretary Hegseth, and they really want to grill those those members of the cabinet over this Iran conflict. I'm going to go to a caller now, and maybe it'll encourage you to call as well. Let's go to Cliff, calling from Illinois on line 6, an ACLJ champion. Cliff, you're on Seculo.
Yeah, hi, thank you. I got two quick points, if I may.
Yeah, go ahead.
First one is it's a stall tactic, like what they did to Governor Walker in Wisconsin before Trump. They fled there in order to come to Illinois. And then recently what they did in Texas, they fled Texas, not able to do their job.
Right.
Now the senators in Washington, D.C., they want to basically do what these other Democrats had done in the past.
Right.
They're throwing a wrench into the monkey works of how everything's supposed to be run because they're spoiled, rotten little brats.
Cliff, I hear you. I mean, and yes, what he's referring to also is that the senators in Texas that fled the state to avoid allowing cloture for the vote on redistricting. They have done that many times in Texas. In other states, he mentioned Scott Walker from Wisconsin, them fleeing the state. And yes, to some degree, it is a stall tactic in that they're not even being shy about that. They're saying, we're not going to allow any business of the Senate to move forward. And they're using Senate rules. They're using privileged motions that senators can bring. But they're coordinating and doing this. And they are forcing it so that they can stall and run out the clock on whatever sort of business may be going until they get their way. Now, here's the other side of it. They're going to claim victory. Because in no world would the Secretary of State and Secretary of Defense not at some point testify before these committees. That's the oversight role of the Senate and of the Congress. They are going to testify. So these senators are, as soon as they agree on a time, going to say, look, we won. We got it. We got what we wanted. Which is also disingenuous. There is no world that Secretary Rubio and Secretary Hegseth would not eventually testify, and probably pretty quickly. They have regular testimony because they're also saying we want to justify budget requests because who has the power of the purse? The Senate, the Congress. So yes, they will eventually testify, but they are going to use this not only as a stall tactic, as Cliff said, but as a way to claim victory later and try to raise their stature within the party once again. It's all politics, folks. It's disingenuous. It's dangerous to some degree when they're still keeping the Homeland Security Department shut down. And I think it's got to change. We'll talk to you in the next segment.
Right now, your most sacred rights are under attack. Your right to free speech, your right to worship, your right to educate your children the way you choose. If successful, these attacks will have a destructive impact on the future of our republic. We're fighting in courtrooms across the country to have a lasting impact, defending and upholding our values that this nation was founded on. From protecting the rights of kids to pray and share their faith,
the best thing you can do is take a stand. There's nothing too small. A kid who wants to start a Bible club is how the ACLJ got its first case to the U.S. Supreme Court. And today, we would take that case as long as we needed to.
Every victory makes a major impact. And it's only possible because of the support of ACLJ members and champions. This is your opportunity to double your impact to defend freedom. For you, your children, and generations to come. Go to aclj.org/impact and have your tax-deductible donation doubled today.
We've witnessed monumental legal victories from defending the 14th Amendment and protecting our sacred American right to vote, the overturning of Roe v. Wade, and standing up for the religious liberty of our kids and seniors. But even with the many historic wins we've achieved, the battle is far from over. The attacks on our constitutionally protected rights persist. Countless unborn babies remain in jeopardy, and across the globe, innocent Christians are being targeted and killed across this country and around the world. This fight isn't just the ACLJ's, it's all of ours. It belongs to every American who wants to preserve the values and beliefs on which this nation was founded. None of the victories we've won would have been possible without the unwavering support of ACLJ members and ACLJ champions. It's been an honor to fight for you all these years. Join us in fighting for freedom. Have your donation doubled at aclj.org/freedom.
Welcome back to Seculo. I'm joined now by Rick Grinnell. And Rick, I want to get right into this. What we've been talking about this show is that now we have a group of senators, Democrat senators, that are vowing to shut down something new. This time they're going to shut down the Senate itself until they get their way, because they really want hearings with Secretary of State Marco Rubio, Secretary Hegseth, as well as other officials on the Iran action. Now, I just said earlier, I go, there is no world in which these cabinet members don't eventually testify. I mean, that is how it's going to work. There's going to be hearings on it, and especially they do periodic hearings on funding. So they're going to testify before the Senate. But at the same time, the funding for another shutdown caused by Democrats, the Department of Homeland Security, is being held up in the Senate right now. At a time where we're seeing reports that there have been encrypted messages that have gone out of Iran, ABC News is reporting on this, that could be activating sleeper cells outside of the country. We saw what happened in New York over the weekend. We've seen the panic in some of the flights that have had to be diverted. These senators think it's a better idea to shut down the Senate, which will keep the Department of Homeland Security shut down, than doing the business that people sent them to do, and maybe even have a debate, maybe get you some reforms from the Department of Homeland Security to get this back open. But they think it's a better idea to do nothing at all. What's your take on this?
Look, I think that what we're seeing over the last couple of years is that Democrats are willing to pull every lever of power that they have, whether it's political prosecutions, it's within the Senate, it's manipulating the Senate rules. It makes me immediately think that we should change the rules now to pass the policies that we want to put forward right now, since Republicans had the House, the Senate, and the White House, and the filibuster. I mean, what I see is a little evidence right now of what they're doing to not pay for DHS. That is a warning sign for what they will do in the future. The last couple of years, they have not followed protocol. They've not followed tradition. And so when we hold to this idea that, oh, the Senate has this tradition and we should follow the traditions, we're going to look weak, because the Senate Democrats are signaling to us they are ready to pull every lever of power that they can get their hands on. And so I'm very concerned that this action that they're taking now to not fund DHS, which is extremely dangerous, especially right now, is going to get worse as we move forward. I am watching the sleeper cell debate in America. And when you combine the open border that we had for the 4 years of Joe Biden with this this focus now on the sleeper cells because of world events, I think it's a dangerous combination that we just don't know who is in this country lying and waiting to attack us.
And as we even know from the Department of Homeland Security's own numbers, there were hundreds of individuals that were known on the terror watch lists that came across our porous border during the Biden administration. Hundreds. Those are the ones we know about.
Yeah.
Exactly. And at a time when, and that doesn't count all the gotaways that they never even encountered. But Rick, we're sitting here at a time where we are seeing heightened alert. Clearly, the airlines are very high alert. The Kansas City airport was evacuated for hours. We saw what happened in New York with two ISIS-inspired individuals that have been fortunately arrested with no one harmed. But this is what was a concern from the beginning. Whenever there is an action against an exporter of terror like Iran, but now that we're in the middle of it, and we also see that they won't fund the department, are they also going to hold up the next nominee to lead that department at a time of crisis like this?
Look, I think what they're signaling is they will do anything to make their political points. I am very nervous when I look at the situation, again, because you rightfully point out they only admitted to hundreds of people on the terror watch list that got into our country. They were forced to admit because they were caught. Think of how many people got in that they didn't acknowledge. And the tip of the iceberg analogy is very real to me. And I'm concerned about it. I'm watching to see what happens. I think that the line in wait to attack Americans, individuals who are living inside our country, I think this is a very real thing. We need to be working very closely with the FBI and local law enforcement to make sure that we're watching and running down every single lead. You see what happened. You saw what happened this morning in Toronto. Americans are going to be targeted with these world events. And so I want to make sure that we're communicating very clearly to our Democratic friends. Now is not the time to play politics. Fund DHS completely.
And part of it, and you say play politics, because that is what they're doing. We know even this move by Cory Booker and Chris Murphy that are saying we're going to shut down the Senate till we get our way. They will be able to claim victory on this because, as I said, there's no world in which these cabinet members don't eventually testify. That's how it works. So they'll be able to claim victory. And look, we shut down the Senate and got our way. Obviously, Cory Booker has run for president before. We understand the cycle of this. We know that Chris Murphy has tried to raise his profile within the national audience of late. We know what they're looking for. But I guess my thought here is they talk about how serious this is. And we see Senator Kaine, raising that war powers motion that got shot down. And we see people like Senator Kelly joining him. I'm curious why no reporters have asked Senator Kelly, do you agree with your colleague, Senator Kaine, that this is an illegal war? If so, are you going to tell people to not follow the orders? Of course, no real reporting going on there. But all of these people that are saying it's so serious, we have to stop it. But at the same time, aren't taking it seriously enough to do something like fund the Department of Homeland Security. It just makes all of their "it's so serious" comments seem disingenuous, that they don't really believe it's as serious as they are trying to make it seem, because if they did, they would do the right things to protect the American people.
Look, we have two Democratic senators in California, New Mexico, and Arizona. All three states have two Democratic senators. These states are taking the brunt of the border crossings, the illegal activity, and yet all six of these Democratic senators are saying that we are not going to fund the Department of Homeland Security, knowing that they are border states. I think that this is so outrageous. The people in California, the people in New Mexico, the people in Arizona should be outraged that their senators are playing politics with their safety and the rest of America's safety. What we have learned is that every state is a border state eventually. And so one of those ideas is that the states that are on the front lines, the ones that are experiencing it first, should be absolutely vigilant and the toughest. And yet we now have six Democratic senators from border states that are ignoring this growing crisis. I think it's outrageous.
Rick, thank you so much for joining us today and for your insight on this. It is outrageous. And the complicity of the media of airing their comments, but no pushback. I think that is the one that bothers me the most too, is when Senator Kelly was the face of that, you don't have to follow illegal orders campaign. And then he's joining Senator Kaine, who is calling this an illegal war. Senator Kelly has not gone that far. He has said it's reckless, it's dangerous to our men and women in uniform. There's no clear end game. But where are the real reporters in Washington asking him that question? Do you agree with your colleague of whose resolution you voted for when he calls it an illegal operation? Because that will tell you a lot. And that's what I want to hear from Senator Kelly. Do you agree with your Senate colleague? Because that means a lot. If he agrees with him, then his video of telling people to not follow orders of the military, that is getting very close to calling for mutiny and calling for insurrection and push back on the president. However, I don't think he would go that far. And I think if he was actually asked the question, he would say he disagrees with his Senate colleague, which would also cause a whole problem with their own caucus in the Senate. But where are the reporters asking that question? It's not the ones he's going to talk to, I'll tell you that. When we get back, folks, I'll take your phone calls. I also want to play a clip from Pakistan that I teased earlier. You're not going to want to miss that. But support us during our 7 days of global impact at aclj.org/global and double your impact around the world.
We've witnessed monumental legal victories from defending the 14th Amendment and protecting our sacred American right to vote, the overturning of Roe versus Wade, and standing up for the religious liberty of our kids and seniors. But even with the many historic wins we've achieved, the battle is far from over. The attacks on our constitutionally protected rights persist. Countless unborn babies remain in jeopardy, and across the globe, innocent Christians are being targeted and killed across this country and around the world. This fight isn't just the ACLJ's, it's all of ours. It belongs to every American who wants to preserve the values and beliefs on which this nation was founded. None of the victories we've won would have been possible without the unwavering support of ACLJ members and ACLJ champions. It's been an honor to fight for you all these years. Join us in fighting for freedom. Have your donation doubled at aclj.org/freedom.
Right now, your most sacred rights are under attack. Your right to free speech, your right to worship, your right to educate your children the way you choose. If successful, these attacks will have a destructive impact on the future of our republic. We're fighting in courtrooms across the country to have a lasting impact, defending and upholding our values that this nation was founded on. From protecting the rights of kids to pray and share their faith,
the best thing you can do is take a stand. There's nothing too small. A kid who wants to start a Bible club is how the ACLJ got its first case to the U.S. Supreme Court. And today, we would take that case as long as we needed to.
Every victory makes a major impact, and it's only possible because of the support of ACLJ members and champions. This is your opportunity to double your impact to defend freedom for you, your children, and generations to come. Go to aclj.org/impact and have your tax-deductible donation doubled today.
Welcome back to Seculo, final segment of the broadcast. And before I get to callers, of which I'm going to do, I did want to play this clip for you because I think it's important you see what we're talking about. These are the parents of one of our other clients in Pakistan, Shahzad, who at 16 years old was arrested on blasphemy charges and given the death penalty. And we're still fighting and have been for many years for justice there and to get him released. We are confident in our ability to argue at the higher courts in Pakistan and get freedom, but it is a long, hard battle, and the stakes are this young man's life. So I want you to hear directly from his parents. Our team was able to get a camera crew and get their story of their son, who is languishing on death row in Pakistan. Take a watch.
He has been accused of blaspheming the Prophet of Islam, but he didn't do it. It started in 2017. He started working at a hospital as a janitor. So there were two other guys that worked in that room with him. One was involved with a religious sect. Shahzad came home one day, and he said a few days ago, there was sort of a conversation between him and the Muslim guy Ishtiak. He came home and told me that Jalali says we don't look like Christians. Why don't you become Muslims? Shahzad said, no, I don't want to become a Muslim. I'm good with my religion. I'm not going to leave Christianity. Ishtiak told Shahzad that when he asked him, why doesn't he become a Muslim? You gave me an answer in anger. Why were you angry about it? Why do you not become a Muslim? What's wrong with becoming a Muslim? Ishtiak told him about Muslim prophets. Shahzad told him that there's a Muslim guy who knows my dad, and he comes and hangs out with my dad. And even he drinks alcohol, and he swears whenever he hears a name with Muhammad in it. And he's a Muslim. So Ishtiak Jalali said, what kind of Muslim is he? Who says these kind of things? Shahzad told him that it was his father's friend. And Ishtiak just got furious. He swore at Shahzad, walked out of the room, and he slammed the door. After that, he didn't talk to Shahzad. Later, Ishtiak came home to fetch Shahzad and told him that he was going to take him to the hospital because the doctor was back. Now there's a madrasa near the hospital. It's an Islamic religious school. Ishtiak brought other Muslim men from the Muslim religious fanatic group with him. Across the street from the hospital, there's a mobile phone shop, and they took Shahzad there to record his words. And there were maybe 30 to 35 people who gathered all from that Muslim sect. A lot of people were there. After they took him to that store, they asked him, tell us what you said. Shahzad kept telling them that it's not me who said anything. It's my dad's friend who said bad words. I haven't said anything. From the phone store, they took him to the madrasa, the Islamic school. Shahzad's dad and his older brother went to the hospital, and some people told them, don't even go near the madrasa. All these Islamic clerics are very, very angry. The police were informed and came to the madrasa. The policeman said that he's going to take Shahzad with him. So he took Shahzad to the police station. We met Shahzad in prison. He was very worried, and he kept crying. I would only meet him for 20 minutes each time. He was a little child when they arrested him, and he's still too young.
We go to the prison, and we just survive by just seeing him. It's like a bird in a cage, and it's like my son is locked in a cage.
So we just plead with everybody who are watching, pray for us. Pray for our son that he gets justice.
As you heard Shahzad's mother say there, pray for Shahzad, pray for them, pray for the ACLJ team in Pakistan. And you can also join us as we fight in cases like those around the world, where a 16-year-old boy, in a conversation with a colleague, gets taken by a mob, charged with blasphemy, put on death row, and has been sitting in prison ever since. And we are fighting at the highest levels in Pakistan for his freedom. But that is what global impact means when you support the ACLJ. That is what we fight for. And I thought it was important for you to see from his parents, because we can talk about it all we want. But until you see it from Pakistan, what we're talking about, then you truly know what we're dealing with. I'm going to get back to some callers here, as I said I would, very quickly. Doug is calling from Washington. He's an ACLJ champion. Doug, you're on Seculo.
Thank you. Two questions. First off, when the Senate decides to hold hearings, the various secretaries show up. I assume they are compelled to. Are they compelled by statute, or does that exist in the Constitution itself?
So, once again, typically they come voluntarily as they set a hearing. Many times they are testifying because of budgetary reasons. They are coming to give a defense of their budget to the committees that oversee that. Congress has an oversight role. They can be subpoenaed if for other reasons, if they don't want to go. That is at the cabinet level or under secretaries, things of that nature. But this is a formal role, the oversight of the Congress. So, yes, cabinet secretaries can be compelled to go testify on certain things as well. They can't make the president go testify, but the various members underneath the cabinet can be. So, in your secondary question, can the White House do the same to members of Congress? No, there's no formal oversight role in that way of the executive branch of Congress. They don't even really have that type of forum where there's compelling in hearing. So that it doesn't work that way. It's kind of a one-way street on the oversight portion of that. But thank you. Great question. I'm going to get to Michael, who's calling on line 5 from Florida. And I've got another Michael, California. I'm going to try to get to you too. But Michael from Florida, you're on Seculo.
My question is, a lot of these issues seem to be, you know, you can say 80-20, that type of thing, that the Democrats are, you know, like the SAVE Act and those kinds of things. My question, though, is in the long game, because Schumer hasn't really had a win for anything, would it be a huge win if he was able to goad the Republican Party into doing away with the filibuster?
You know, Michael, I think that is probably some of their end game. We know that they wanted to get rid of the filibuster back when Joe Biden was in office, but they had senators like Kyrsten Sinema, who was actually left the party and left the Senate altogether, who was adamantly against it for the reasons that we always say, that they're going to use it next. It is a check that is within their rules. Do they have to do it? No. Can they do other ways? Yes. But you do have to think futuristically of what the next Congress will do when it's not your party in charge. I think that's probably a lot of their end game, is trying to get the Republicans to be the one that did it. Because they ended it for judicial nominees a long time ago. It was the Democrats that did that. And then they cry foul when Republicans play along with their rules that they set. Folks, thank you for joining me today. We covered a lot today. Michael from California, sorry I'm not going to be able to get to you. We're running out of time. But I do once again want to encourage you to support the ACLJ during this 7 days of global impact. I showed you many ways that is a tangible use of your support, whether it be in Pakistan or around the world. ACLJ.org/global.
Right now, your most sacred rights are under attack. Your right to free speech, your right to worship, your right to educate your children the way you choose. We're fighting in courtrooms across the country to have a lasting impact.
And it's only possible because of the support of ACLJ members and champions. This is your opportunity to double your impact, to defend freedom. Go to ACLJ.org/impact and have your tax-deductible donation doubled today.